Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Wide awake, bushy tail, as the phrase goes. So, I want to start with a personal anecdote, and that's really a thank you to everyone who's prayed for me. And I want to give you kind of an update of where I am in my my health situation. So, back last September, I was diagnosed with prostate cancer. And there's three ways you can go with that, or maybe more than three, but three, well, four. One is you can do nothing and just let whatever's going to happen, happen, and sometimes you can last 20 years that way. And then the second way is you can have surgery, and surgery is effective, but it also has some side effects, consequences. The third way is regular radiation, and that, as well, can be effective, but has side effects. And then the fourth way is proton therapy, which is a form of radiation. And they don't offer that in the state of North Carolina. So I investigated that in Hampton, Virginia. Travis Smith, who used to be a part of the church, had that same treatment in Jacksonville, Florida. And I talked to him as well and other people. And I decided ultimately to go that route. Now, I needed to get approval from insurance before I did that, and my insurance in North Carolina would not cover that. So I changed insurances at the end of the year to Medicare, and they do cover it. And then just a little tidbit of information for you. If Medicare covers it, then whatever supplement you have will cover it as well. So I got the best supplement I could get, and they covered it as well. So I didn't have to, once I was covered with Medicare, I didn't have to pay a penny on the treatment, which is wonderful, of course. So I went, so obviously there were other details to cover, and they delayed me because I couldn't get the proper kind of biopsies and that type of thing involved. So ultimately, I started on March 2nd. In Hampton. And I was very graciously gifted with a place to stay because Walker and Catherine Hicks, Catherine's parents live in Smithfield, Virginia. And I had done their wedding 19 years ago. That is Catherine Walker's. And met her parents. Of course, I meet a bazillion parents, so I didn't remember them specifically. But they opened their home for me to stay there. It's about a half-hour commute to go for the treatment, and the treatment was about an hour each day. So I've had a lot of time to spend because I was just going back and forth for half an hour and then getting there a little ahead of time and then having the treatment as well. Treatment was not invasive in terms of pain or discomfort, really. So I had 44 treatments. While I was there, it was about nine and a half weeks. And so the interesting thing about this is they can't declare you cancer-free. They can only determine whether you're moving in a direction to be cancer-free. So unlike surgery, would be able to say that. So bottom line is, I will know in August when I have a regular PSA blood test, if my numbers are going down. If my numbers are going down, that indicates it's being effective, and then over a three-year period, I will ultimately be cancer-free. But right now, it's just not multiplying the same way it had been before. So, obviously, I'm very hopeful about that. I have as part of my regular physical, I'm having a PSA blood test. And my prayer would be, and I ask you to pray with me, that would be a good number, and things are showing in a good direction. Although I've learned that you really can't go on percentages, you can't go on numbers, you have to trust in the Lord and not in the physicality of things. Even if you're feeling well, you have to trust in the Lord, not on how you're feeling or what the numbers are or percentages are. Now the percentages are, I'm not going to depend on this, but I'm just telling you this, is that after 5 years, 99% of the people who have gone through this treatment are cancer-free. So, you know, that's a nice thing, but again, That means 1% is, and that means you can't count our numbers. But so I'm hopeful about this, but again, trusting in the Lord in this. But I wanted to thank you all for praying. I know many people have asked me about my status and have wondered where I am or how I'm doing. And I'm doing very well, although my stamina is not up to snuff. It started out very well, and I was working out at the Y in Smithfield, so that was nice too. And I was building up some strength, but they say it has kind of captures you as a second wind, that you don't have the same strength or endurance that you had before. So a friend of ours gifted us with a trip to Europe, with the plane flight for a trip to Europe. We just got back last Thursday. And so there was some lack of endurance during that time, because you're walking a lot, you're moving between all the venues a lot. And I was never swooning or something like that, but you know, you just have to stop and rest sometimes rather than going up a 45-degree incline. And so that's what I was doing. We had a wonderful time. We went to Italy and Slovenia, several parts in Italy, and then the capital of Slovenia. We had just a wonderful time for 3 weeks. We had a great time. So I'm feeling much better following the trip, and I'm hoping to gain some of that endurance and stamina as well. So that's what you can pray for. My August numbers and appointment, and then my rebuilding of endurance in my life. Thanks so much for your prayers. I really appreciate it. Kathy does too. Well, I do want to eventually talk about the back page, which is some of the things related to the senior initiative that we're having here, but I really don't want to take most of the time doing that. I wanted to give kind of some biblical insights on aging. Anybody in the room not aging? Everybody in the room is aging. We're all moving in a direction, aren't we? And I thought it would be good to give some biblical perspective on that, because, and I'll say this in the back page, but everyone's going to die. I don't mean that in a morose way. I mean that in a perspectival way. We need to get our minds straight about where we're going in life. Our ultimate goal in life is to be with the Lord. We'll have renewed bodies. There's all kinds of wonderful things going to be involved in that. But in this life, we kind of peak at a certain part physically, mature in other ways, such as wisdom. And then, you know, I don't know about you, but I have some aches and pains, even beyond the cancer stuff, that I feel every day. And eventually, you know, we'll succumb to all that. But that's not what marks us. That's not who we are. And so we want to have a broad perspective of what life is, and hence what death is as well. But what aging is. Okay? So maybe I'd start with this. I'm going to highlight some books that I've come across that would be helpful to you. One is a very helpful book on a renewed ministry for seniors. This is very impactful on me and part of what this ministry is going to be based on, A Vision for the Aging Church. And it was written in 2007 by a doctor, and he's got a great perspective on that. So this is a really good book. Another one is one I haven't read yet, but Ken Lloyd has been saying this is a great book, so I just bought it. Billy Graham, Nearing Home. So kind of a perspective of life as he's near the end of his life. And then Setting Boundaries with Your Aging Parents, Allison Bakke. This is a good book, too. And these other ones are kind of classics that I didn't know about. But many of you know Paul Tournier. I know you would know Paul Tournier, Charles. Doctor, psychiatrist out of Switzerland. Sorry?
The author.
The author. He's a great writer. He's written books on all different kinds of topics. Very wise man. Learn to Grow Old. This was written in the early 70s, but it's a very insightful book for today as well, because he just brings these great insights. And then another one is Aging, The Fulfillment of Life by Henry Nouwen. I'm sure many of you have heard Henry Nouwen. And so he's written a book on aging in the mid-70s as well. So these are all good books. Another one that I want to talk about in terms of retirement as well, preparing or having a mindset for what you're going to do with the rest of your life. Anybody wondering what to do with the rest of their life? And this is by a man I had met before, Walter Wright. He used to be the president of Regent College, which is in Vancouver, not Regent University, but Regent College. The Third of Life, a very thoughtful book. And this one has as well great summaries at the end of each chapter in which you could use that as a small group kind of thing as well. So I'm going to try to develop some small groups in the church based on this book. But so these are all good books dealing with, you know, the last third of life or the whole aging that we go through in life. And what is our perspective of this? What are we trying to accomplish? What is God wanting us to do while we're in this last third of life? So I brought some scriptures together, and some you'll think of other ones, and hopefully you'll have a Bible to look at that. But let's go through some of the scriptures here dealing with insights on aging. And the first one I'm calling it some things that Paul left to Timothy or Titus. Remember, these were two of his people he mentored in life. He brought them along with him on his trips. And he was giving them insight that he had gained in life on end-of-life issues. So I'm calling this calling for the older ones, older men and women. So from 1 Timothy 5, do not rebuke an older man harshly, but exhort him as if he were your father. Treat younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, and younger women as sisters with absolute purity. So, you know, this is we're in a culture in which older people are not honored. I'm not sure if you would say that's true, but I think that's true. Older people are not honored and respected in the way that they need to. So here, in some of his seminal advice, Paul is telling Timothy to not correct or rebuke an older man in a harsh manner, but exhort him. And exhort is a word in the scripture that either means in a strong way to exhort or in a lesser way to encourage. So it's encourage, exhort someone is really what the word means. As if he your father. Now, many of us don't have fathers who are still alive. But you can remember perhaps the later part of life that they were your father, their lives. And what's the difference between being, well, how would you say you, maybe you have an example of someone, of having a father that you had to lightly correct or lightly encourage as against harshly rebuke? Do you have an example of that? Or have you seen a negative example? It's so easy to disrespect people. Why? In my mother's case, my mother had her, well, I'm not sure what early onset is, but early for her, she had it for 16 years, Alzheimer's. So the earlier part of it, she was asked me 4 or 5 times if I wanted a pop. That's what the term was for Coke in the Midwest, pop if I wanted a pop, or wanted something to eat. And she was just being hospitable. But when she'd say the same thing over and over and over again, it's like fingernails on the blackboard, right? So how do you recognize, not really that someone's not themselves, but how do you respect someone for their intention, even if it's not coming out the right way and how you're hearing it? Isn't that what we're talking about, perhaps? Of not being harsh with our elders, with our parents in this case, when they're just trying to be hospitable. Is that an example that you can identify with?
Randy, that's not as much a challenge to me
okay. As
it is just a change in our culture.
Yes, it is.
I mean, because if you think about your parents, they grew up in a different culture. My parents grew up in the Depression.
Yes.
Rosemary's parents grew up in the Depression. So they are very, very frugal.
Yes.
The way they spend their money.
Weren't you there too?
No.
We can come backwards.
I don't see the order of Elvis.
I'm a gleaming in my daddy's eye. No, so, you know, and then, you know, as time goes on,
right.
My generation, we tend to spend a little bit more abundantly. My children's
even more.
What I would spend on.
They're playing express.
So, you know, there's the change in culture, which to me is more of a challenge than
it is.
Somebody that, like my mother, when her mind began to slip,
right.
You know, I realized that, and, you know, you just take a patience pill and you just are more patient and let it go. So a changing culture to me is what is a big challenge.
I think you're right. My every door in our house I grew up in had rubber bands on it. My mother saved every rubber band that came in the house. From newspapers. We got 2 newspapers a day. Double that, you know, in terms of, that's 300 or 700 new rubber bands, and not one was thrown away. Some of them were used on things, but and literally you could not turn the handle because there were so many rubber bands on the doors. I mean, that I thought that was normal. I thought that's what everybody did, but no one else saved rubber bands that I came across.
And did you put rubber bands on your doorknobs now?
No, I don't. Well, we do have a drawer that rubber bands go in.
Yeah.
We do have a drawer for rubber bands and other things.
Right.
It's the everything drawer. Everybody has an everything drawer. Something. But that's just an illustration of, yeah, it was a mindset that you saved everything because you never knew when you're going to need it again, right? So that is a different mindset. It is a different culture thing. And particularly in an age of credit, instead of saving that we're in now. Yeah, someone, anyone else have an example? Or
I guess one? The one that I'm struggling with right now is my father is losing his memory and is extremely borrowed hearing.
Yes.
And we know the cognitive connection between being able to hear and being able to create memories.
Right.
But he is refusing to do anything about his hearing.
Hearing.
I mean, just and to the point that it's now been tossed to me because my mom can't get him, my sister can't go, is just come to town and take him to this hearing check.
Right.
And trying to figure out a way to do that without being harsh.
Or without tricking either.
I'm actually trying to figure out without being harsh. because that's kind of, we've been working on this for over a year.
Sure.
You know, so that's
well, we all have to make tough decisions. I mean, one of the tough decisions with parents, if their driving abilities have deteriorated, is taking the keys away. And usually it's got to be a team family a thing to do that. So it's not... There are difficult decisions to have to make. We just don't want to make it hard. Yes?
We used to tease my grandfather and ask him if he parked by the rail. Because he would go forward until he bumped, and then he would back up until he bumped, and then he would go forward until he bumped, and then he would back up until he bumped, until he was happy where the car was.
He parked by touch.
all
we have to do is just make the thing come out of the airbag come out.
Yeah.
I know that. So the point is, and we're talking about parents as well. So this is, and you know, this, how do we do this in a good way? And Paul's giving us something of a standard that he's telling Timothy. Another one, Titus, that he said, teach the older men to be temperate, worthy of respect, self-controlled, sound of faith, in love and in endurance. Likewise, teach the older women to be reverent in the way they live, not to be slanderers or addicted to much wine, but to teach what is good. Then they can train the younger women to love their husbands and children, to be self-controlled and pure, to be busy at home, to be kind and be subject to their husbands, so that no one will malign the word of God. So, again, here's something for both men and women. And Titus is to teach that to that group of people, older people. And to, again, be delicate in how you're doing it, but strong in what is being taught. I mean, to teach someone to be temperate is not wishy-washy. You're wanting to be restrained in what you're living by. What strikes you in that? Someone look at that particular verse and say something that strikes them about the whole idea of older. Well, in this case, it's a younger person, likely. Titus teaching the elders to be this way. I'm using the word elders instead of elders so that we don't miss which elders are elders. Okay. Jim? You look like you're going to say something.
Well, I have lots of thoughts, but I think one of the implications of this is that you're asking younger people to teach the older people.
Yeah.
Perhaps there wasn't a culture of respect for the older people, and it had to be gendered, it had to be actually fostered, and sometimes the younger people were the ones that needed to actually engender this respect and this appreciation for them. And it also implies, because I'm thinking of something, that the baby boomers, us, 1946 and on, actually post-World War II, were probably, arguably, at least in the U.S., the first culture to begin to separate ourselves from our parents.
Right.
And to either move away and leave them in their original home, or with other consequences and certainly other valid reasons to move them into retirement communities. And I'll leave it at that. That's just a reality. That is what has happened, and it has created, I think, a distance because we don't see our older parents or older family members very often. We don't have this opportunity to interact in a way that we can teach and we can engender respect because we see them only on holidays or anything. It's a bit of an extreme, but I think it does represent something to be discussed at a later time.
And when you think of and we think of our parents, I mean, I was one of five children, and two of the siblings live in Atlanta, and one lived in Minnesota, and one lived in Chicago, and one is here in North Carolina. Where do they go to follow their children, you know, if once they retire? They can't split themselves up to live in several places. So that's another problem that happened in that post-war era of how do you maintain the relationship unless you're living nearby? It's a hard thing. So, again, older people need to be taught to these things because then they're going to pass it on to the younger people. And so this is one of the things I would challenge us. How are we, beyond our own children, how are we passing things on to the younger generation? Well, first of all, I don't see much of a dialogue going on about that. I mean, we don't have the college class of the young adults in here so that we could talk about something like that. That would be a valuable thing to talk about. But how... You know, one of the things I've heard that the college students like coming here because they like being in an intergenerational church. They like that. Now, that's nice on the large level of Sunday morning, but how is that going to affect them in terms of having a parent figure in their life or a grandparent figure in their life if there's no talk going on? You know? You had a point.
I think the word teach is the one that, for so long I thought it was only word of mouth.
Yeah.
Okay, but I think the greatest teachers for me when I was a young wife, mother, was just the interaction with older women who lived in everyday circumstances.
Yes.
I mean, you know, their lives were not perfect, but just seeing them, the way they lived and loved God, just work each day.
And particularly people who as well talk of their mistakes. You know, it's easy to talk about your victories, but when you're transparent and talk about your mistakes, then younger mothers and younger wives realize that what happens to them is not unusual. They're going through the warp and woof of life in which there's going to be things that are going to go wrong as well. How do we forgive those? How do we make up for them? How do we reconcile them? And then how do we move on? Yes.
I'm glad you brought this up, because right now I'm in the process of, I'm the last of my nuclear family, the last of the Mohicans. And there are all kinds of relatives out there know nothing about what happened back in the 1930s, Charles, 40s or 50s, and know practically nothing of my family. My brother, who was a medical doctor, died at age 52, and he never talked very much while he was with his children. And just 2 days ago, I called my niece up and read some of the stuff I'm writing up, and pictures and so on, sending it out en masse to all of them. And one family has 8 children in it who know very little of our family history. So I'm kind of, in a sense, educating, and it's fun because I'm getting letters back saying, gee, I didn't know all that happened with my dad or whatever, or my mother. I have a brother and a sister.
Yeah.
And actually, if I live 5 more years, I'll be in the decade in which I was born.
Wow.
So, I think it's important that we don't just sit back and say, oh, they're not interested, they won't listen, they won't. But they all are really eating it up. I was surprised.
Let me give you a respond to that. That's a great point. And one of the things, and I'm just going to skip ahead just for this point, one of the things we'd like to do in this senior initiative is to help find a vehicle that we can help people to do that.
Yeah.
You remember when Jane Stan died? Jane,
oh, yeah.
Stan, and we had a video of her and interactive, and you might not have known that, but it was my wife interviewing her, but we cut her out so that Jane was just responding to the questions because it was about Jane. And so what happened was that we asked some pointed questions to Jane, and Jane would respond to that. And we would like to do that more. We would like to do that with anybody who is growing older, which is all of us, right? So we would like to have a video with some questions that people can think about ahead of time, and then ask these kind of questions and videotape this and give a CD to the people who have gone through this. Because what you can do in that is kind of do a timeline of your life and interesting things that are important. I did this with my father, but with audio tape, not video. And with it, for lack of a tripod, it was with audio instead of video. But with that, I asked him about his growing up years. He grew up in Fargo, North Dakota. He had to walk 3 blocks to get water because there wasn't a pump except for 3 blocks away. There were outhouses, and then what kind of sports he played or games he played growing up, and when he moved to Chicago, and all these things. And then I made copies of it, initially on the audio tape, but then eventually into a CD, and gave it to everybody in my family. So they have it to pass on to their families as well. And it's just a great thing to have something like that. And of course, even Bohr, he had a video of as well besides that. But we'd like to do that with people, help them creatively think of their past and what they want to pass on. And what would you say to this next generation? Or what do you say to so-and-so's son? Even those kind of pointed questions. And then out of that, we'd like to have it. Does that sound like something that people would be interested in being involved in as a recipient? Don't see a lot of ups and downs, but go ahead.
Most of you know my children who kind of grew up in this class, you know, from probably about 13 or 14 on. They really value the fact that they've had conversations with you. They love to come back and talk to, no offense intended, it's a Tim Turn and Dear. They're old people. They're fun. But they really have valued that time enough that I know that Sarah and and Charles particularly have been working to try to figure out how to bridge the gap between this generation and the youth group, mm-hmm. and try to find a way they can interact. Mm. You know, that Sarah has found it valuable. Plus, you know, it gave them all the confidence to deal with people too. Yeah. You know, it's so interesting to see how many of the generation don't know how to interact with someone who's older, than they are, and just don't have that. But you know, that's part of this whole thing.
That's right.
You know, in teaching
familiarity, having been around, they're comfortable in talking with people, and people are comfortable talking.
I'll make a plug for that now. The youth are going to give a talent show to the Joy Ministry in January.
Cool.
We'll have them for summer.
That's great. That's a great idea.
If I can put a different perspective on this a little bit, and I love this input, because this is, Karen and I moved here largely because of my parents, and I've got a brother and sister living here. But the other part I love about this is Titus is the younger one teaching the older men.
Right.
Karen and I have four children, you know, and they're all strong in faith, but still growing. And so to listen to them and to get their perspective, because they come at it from I'm sure nobody in this room has noticed this. They come at life from a different perspective, yeah. Not from a younger perspective. They're at a different point in their lives.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot from listening to my sons who are now young men, young married, starting off their lives. And it's interesting. The other part to this, too, is, you know, we're a room full of believers. Titus is teaching,
right?
If they're believers, they're brand new.
They're novices, right.
So there's some older men in that church that kind of need to learn how to be,
right.
How are you temperate? What does that mean as a Christian to be an older, temperate man?
Right.
There's so much in that passage that I love that. And I think all of us, even if we're believers, we can still learn.
Absolutely.
From these young kids out there, you know, and that's, I love that. I just think that's a different approach of looking at it.
Rosemary and I are involved in CMDA, which is Christian Medical Dental Association, and we have some chapters at Duke and at UNC. We have suppers and we network with the kids, and you know, they're so much farther along than I was at that stage of life in medical school. It's an enjoyment to see, you know, what the next generation is doing.
But there's a lot of non-believers out there though too that are older folks too. That if we can prepare this younger group of believers to talk to older people about faith and why it's important. I mean, that's a powerful tool.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, just imagine that. I mean, there's a lot of power in that too. Because those baby boomers out there, there's a lot of them out there, and there's a few of them in here. There's a lot of baby boomers that went through some periods in our, you know, in the history that they walked away from. But now they're in their elder years and they don't have anything to hold on to at all. I mean, they really are. I mean, I watch some of those older folks that just are grasping at that point in their lives, what is my purpose in life?
Right.
What's this all been about? You know, I think there's been a few, maybe ecclesiastical moments. But I just think it's, and we play that role too, I think. You know, whether they're friends and peers, or even more senior folks than us too. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a great challenge for us too, to be that Titus, that younger person.
To the older.
Yeah.
Randy, so you've been in this church a long time.
35 years.
35 years. And those of us who were in this church where we first started, we were married here and have been gone for 30 plus years and back. In this church family, how do you see from your perspective that we can have the conversations that build community, et cetera? Because I just want to throw one quick thought out. In the early days, we used to have large group sharing, you know?
We did. In
those days, we'd have Josh Godset and the Colonel and, you know, people stand up and share. It was when we were smaller. But there wasn't a mechanism for imparting at least perspective, wisdom, etc. And in this church family, more so than our personal family, how do you see we can be effective to have that intergenerational conversation? Is there anything practical that you see we can get behind or do?
Well, I think what Charles is talking about, and of course that's an entertainment thing that he's talking about for the Choi ministry, but I think any kind of approachment of people to bring them in. So, you know, bringing in three youth and asking them to make a presentation and talking to them here would be an appropriate thing. Or asking if there's a way to be invited to the youth group to have a conversation like this there. I don't think you're going to get everybody together with everybody, but I think you can make overtures into that. And then I think that, I don't know if we've done this recently, but we used to have suppers of six where people match up with other people, and I think a deliberate attempt to do that with that's intergenerational could be helpful. There's six people, some of them are single, some could be married, but different age groups getting together and then being able to talk through, that could be a good thing as well.
I'd like to speak to that from where I sit. And I was talking to Andy about this earlier. You know, there is a great opportunity for this age to serve in the church intergenerationally. We always, if you look in the bulletin today, you will see them asking for people to help with summer Sunday school. Sunday school will be coming up next year. We are always needing people to mm-hmm. do that. Mm-hmm. The youth groups, they in their Sunday school at 9:30, they break out into small groups. They need people, adults, to lead those groups. My senior high child was leading junior high this year because there were not adults. We have a college group. You know, there are so many ways that you can reach out intergenerationally in this church. And you can't wait. You present yourself as someone who's willing to help. You know, Titus is here talking about the youth teaching the older people, and then he turns around and says, now you teach the younger people. But we're the ones who have the wisdom to see that they need help. And a lot of times they will take help from people who are not their parents more easily than their parents. So if you're looking for ways to intergenerationally impact this body, they're there. You've just got to maybe get out of your comfort zone, and instead of just going to church, well, go to Sunday school and then church mm-hmm. or something else. So there are lots and lots of ways to plug in, and you could be uncomfortable doing them at first. Mm-hmm.
But you'd be supported in doing them. You're not out there alone.
Well, I mean, you know, do you really want to go and sit with a group of teenagers and have them talk at you? Well, maybe, maybe not. But as they get to know you better, you know. So there are lots of ways to do this. We don't have to, you know, make it. I mean, we got very few kids who want to come here and sit and talk from a platform like Randy's doing. That's very few.
But also,
I agree with what you say, but it's a two-way street. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that sometimes, and maybe this is part of what Randy is supposed to do, is make younger people in the church aware that we would like to be involved, that we are available. You know, on a personal level, I have volunteered numerous times, and it's also dead ears.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Sometimes you just put yourself there.
It's a two-way street.
It is a two-way street.
Yeah, and I do see, and there has been a culture, at least from where I'm seeing, of in the church, splitting the younger people off from the older people, have their own worship services and stuff, which I think is bad, but, you know, maybe we have to, from our elder board, insist that the youth group make use of the resources that are offered. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are things that have to be done, but there are opportunities as well.
But also, you have to go through the person that's in charge, and that's what Charles did. He volunteered. If you need me, I'll be glad to help you.
Sure.
And then that was it.
Yeah.
So it's too much.
Call me when that happens.
No, I can help smooth some things.
One more comment before we go.
I'd like to point out, though, Timothy was young. Titus was in his 60s.
Okay. And we'll find out how old was. Let's go on to the next one. Because brevity of life in Psalm...
Andy, do you know the dropout rate for this upcoming generation right now, that say in high school, college right now, is very high. Dropout from church.
Church, yeah, very high.
Throughout our country.
Yeah,
it's
very
phenomenal.
High. Yeah, it is. Even in our church.
30-40% more.
Brevity of life, Psalm 90. The length of our days is 70 years, or 80 if we have the strength. Teach us to number our days aright, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. May the favor of the Lord our God rest upon us. Establish the works of our hands for us. Yes, establish the works of our hands. And then Psalm 39. Show me, O Lord, my life's end, and the number of my days. Let me know how fleeting my life is. You have made my days a mere handbreadth. The span of my years is nothing before you. Each man's life is but a breath. Man is a mere phantom as he goes to and fro. He bustles about, but only in vain. He heaps up wealth, not knowing who will get it. But now, O Lord, what do I look for? My hope is in you. How old was David when he died? A ripe old age, it says. How old was David? He was 70.
For 40 years, and he ruled about
30. No, he's 30 when he became king, and he reigned 40 years. So he's 70 years old. That was a ripe old age back in that. Which, of course, with medical advances, we are moving longer and longer, which is wonderful. But that's why this is called the third of life, because there's a long third for many people who are left.
So are we over right, Randy?
Sorry?
I didn't know. Are we over right?
We could be over right. We could be over right. That's a great point. But the point is that we have to. And what does it mean to number my days? Is that just to count the days? Each day we put a calendar check. Well, got that one done. What is the number of our days? What are the authors of this? And usually it's David. What is it saying to number our days?
It's not counting them. It's to make them count.
Make them count. That's a great point. Stop counting and make them count. And what we're talking about here is investiture in other seniors, in other people, is one of the ways that we make our days count. And not doing it in terms of the gathering of wealth, because it's going to evaporate. You can't take it with you. Okay? And so, again, the authors here are talking about both the length of days and the quality of our aging. There's a fear of rejection. Do not cast me away when I am old. Do not forsake me when my strength is gone. Isn't that a true thing for anybody, but for certainly people who are older, that you're going to be left alone, or you're going to be left alone even without God? I mean, all the things in life have gone sour at the end of our life. And where is God when those hurts are going on? David's saying, please don't let that happen to me. This is a guy who's close to God who's saying that in one of his low moments. So those are fear of rejection, fear of being left alone is a giant temptation that can happen. But we do have purpose across generations, and this is, we already talked about this, but remember the days of old, the Deuteronomy 32, consider generations long past. Ask your father, and he will tell you, your elders, and they will explain it to you. Again, elders here could mean older people, not just officials of Israel. How are values ultimately transmitted? How are values transmitted to a society?
By example.
Sorry?
By example.
By example and by encouragement that this is the way things are. And then, of course, The biggest way it is through our parenting. Parents are to transmit values. Look at the way it comes around full circle in Deuteronomy 5. Honor your father and mother as the Lord the God commanded you, so that you may live long and that it may go well for you in the land the Lord your God has given you. So and obviously there's other passages that surround that as well, but honoring your parents is a coming full circle of giving some element of long living, quality living as well, but then the parents are honored as well, so that the ones who transmitted these life goals, these life values, the purpose that go into transgenerational is coming back on them later in their lives, as the values are, and we're taking care of them. You moved here, Mike, to do that. Everybody can't do that, but you did that. That's great that you did that. It's a challenge, isn't it? It's now that you're here.
It presents challenges.
It presents challenges to do that.
And opportunities.
And great opportunities. Jesus, and this I paraphrase this, Jesus said, Moses said to honor your father and mother, and use the human tradition of declaring something to be a gift devoted to God, which is Corban, and therefore nullify the very desire God had for you to care for your parents. In my synopsis of that, I just wonder how many times we do that with the concept that we're supposed to give back to our parents and care for them and respect them and so on, and that many times the very thing that we've been given, we hold off in a particular area, and then we don't honor our parents with the very thing that we've been told to honor them. I'll let you use your imagination what that might mean, but I can know that that's happened in my own life, that it's very easy to think of that as an abstract principle. It's much harder to do that with the hands-on work with those that we love and are to honor. And remember this, Jesus lived this out even to the point that when he got to the cross, one of the last sayings he said was, here is your mother, and here is your son. So Jesus lived out the honoring of his mother, which gives evidence that his father probably wasn't around any longer, he might have died, that honoring his mother was so important that he gave John the task of taking care of him from that point on. And his mother was to be under the stewardship of John. Isn't that amazing? Even at the cross, that honor your parents was being lived out by Jesus. That says a lot.
John outlived the other disciples?
Yeah, John was the one who was on Patmos eventually. And so he probably lived. He was really old when he was there, because that's probably in the 90s, AD 90s, that John was there. So yeah, he was likely a teenager when he was following Jesus, but he was very, very elderly by the time that he was on Patmos. So he was probably one of the younger ones. Yeah.
Well, the home that Mary lived in with John in Turkey is still there.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, it's a place of pilgrimage.
Wow. Wow. And the tradition says she was there as well. Isn't that interesting? So those are scriptures. There are more scriptures. I'm cherry picking scriptures, okay? But these are the kind of summaries that I would say of this whole aspect of aging well. We are always valuable to Christ, including as we age. We tend to value things on how we feel, and many times we don't feel good as we're aging at different parts of our journey, you know? I won't go into the details, but I've had to have different surgeries and different things, and you don't feel very good either before that or after that. But God's with you. God is always with us. And He values our, here's some important things. We're children of God if we're in Christ. We're forgiven for all our sins. We have the Holy Spirit living in our lives. We are brothers and sisters in the Lord. So that means we're related as family members. Those are some simple things that we tend to forget. New Christians forget them. I think aged Christians forget those things as well. Secondly, we are lifelong maturing in knowledge and understanding. Again, that doesn't make us a repository that we just keep like a library that's never used again. We need to outsource what we know. We need to take what we know and give it to other people, both people that are we have personal relationship with and then cross-generationally as well. We are always aging and will experience some suffering. That I think the whole concept of having suffering is part of the Christian life. It's part of human being a human being. If you look at Romans 8, 20 to 27, it's talking about that we are like all of creation going through the threshold, the pains of childbirth and suffering. And that's part of what it is to be a Christian. That's part of what it is to be a human being. We just have to have a good perspective of that, that it's only a temporary thing when we're talking about the longevity of being with God forever. And then, what I mentioned earlier, we will all die. Okay, that can almost be a point in itself. We live as if we're not going to die. We're going to all die. There's only two people who are transported directly to heaven without dying. And that might happen if there's a rapture and we're taken up part of that. But that's up to God. That is not up to us. If He wants to take us without dying, that it's up to Him. But more than likely, of all history, there's only two up till now that didn't die. We will die. And that's not a morose thing. That's the beginning of new life that will be with Christ. We will be absent from the body, but present to the Lord whenever that happens. That's why I think these verses in 1 Corinthians 4 and 5 are incredibly important to know. I preach about those every time I preach a funeral. Because we are in the presence of the Lord. We will eventually have resurrected bodies as well, but right then and there, we are in the presence of the Lord and in the cognizant presence of the Lord. So, because we're going to die, we spend our lives living with Him now as well. So, just in the last, I guess we're overdue, but look at this, take it home with you. We have two kinds of ministries within our senior initiative. One is, I have a prep question. It's not what you're retiring from, but what you're retiring to. What are you retiring to when you retire? And we want to work with people to retire towards some purpose in life. It could be something which someone even starts a business. It could be you go on a mission field. It certainly is going to mean your grandchildren and travel and things like that. We're not excluding that. But what are you retiring to? What is the calling God is calling you to? I think it's important to talk to Him about that as much as when we talked about our early careers as well. And the second one is finishing well. We want to advocate for people in the autumn of their lives. We want to help with our aging parents, for those of us who still have them in all the different areas. There are about 43 different things that people need to be taught about in dealing with these kind of things in our lives. I have that list. I have some websites. We have some websites that people can go to with that. We want to make that available to everybody, these kind of resources. There are local resources in both counties, or many counties, certainly Durham and Orange, that are available. And we want to make those resources available. So that's one of the biggest things we have, helping our aging church members find resources to make wise decisions about our future, like health care, managed care, insurance, giving up car keys, things like that. And then we want to help people outside the church eventually. Now, we've got to take care of our own first, but after we take care of our own, we want to help other people as well to do this well. And as I mentioned, part of that is what I just mentioned to David over here, is forming these legacy tapes that people can have of what their life is meant to them, what they would like to leave as values for their own children and grandchildren. What does that mean to you? And so we want to do that. Carol has done a wonderful thing. We have other people on this group as well. Carol started a website on Facebook and she invited 50 caregivers to it, and all of a sudden those people are talking about their dealing with their parents' situation on her website. And it's something going on almost every day on that, right, Carol?
Yeah.
So it's a wonderful thing. Someone's taken initiative in doing something. If you'd like to be involved, you can talk to Carol about that. You had a point back here, Joe.
I think an important element of this, in terms of caring for people who are aging, is also to care for their spouse. spiritual health?
Absolutely.
Encouraging them? Because I think when Jesus told John, here's your mother, I mean, Mary had other children.
Sure, she did.
Right. So in some ways, I wonder if it wasn't...
But they didn't believe in Jesus at the time.
That's right. Right. John did. So John cared for the spiritual health of Mary.
Yes.
Right. And I've seen older parents, older people, because sickness and these things happen, they get discouraged, right? And so remind them of their faith and what God is talking
about. Thank you. Charles, I'm going to turn it back to you. Thank you. Sorry I went over. Enjoy being with you.
Darrell, what's the site? Is this on Facebook?
Well, it's on Facebook, but you have to contact me because it's a secret room. No, you can't go out.
It's a secret group?
It's secret because people are sharing things about family situations or their personal things. So I don't want anybody to be able to go out there and search, the group and read.
Okay. So if they want to access it, they need to contact
me. If you go onto Facebook, they have two modes of groups. One is secret, and it's not searchable. One is private, you can search it, but not read anything. So if anybody's on Facebook, or if they're not, and they have an email, and they want to get on there, there's a lot of resources posted for Durham and Orange County, as well as other states that have people that are participating in. But they'll need to contact me.
Okay, so you got that. Here is the directory.
Yes.
Okay, so contact Carol if